Welcome again to the monthly news edition of the Kaspersky Daily Podcast. I'm here with Chris Brook, as always. We're going to discuss news from June, which was a busy month with hacks and data breaches affecting a number of prominent brands, some interesting privacy and cryptography news from the tech giants, and of course, we'll check in on the mobile security scene as well. However, we begin with Heartbleed. It's been a while since we've talked about the dangerous internet-wide bug in the OpenSSL encryption library that can be exploited to steal sensitive information such as user credentials and also private encryption keys if the attack is replayed often enough. Rob Graham at a security firm called Errata Security has been running scans on port 443. You should know that port 443 is a major thoroughfare for SSL encrypted HTTPS traffic. So he's been running these scans in order to quantify the number of systems that remain vulnerable to the bug. To be clear, not all HTTPS traffic runs through port 443, and thus, his findings don't represent the entirety of all vulnerable systems. But the scans likely constitute a representative sample. He ran his first scan back in April, just days after the bug emerged, and found that 600,000 systems remained vulnerable on port 443. A month after that, he scanned again. And he found that only half of those systems, or roughly 300,000 systems, remained vulnerable. A few days ago, nearly 3 months out, he did a third scan, and he found 300,000 systems remained vulnerable. What this suggests essentially is that the zeal to resolve the Heartbleed bug may be waning. Graham says he's going to scan again at 6 months and then yearly after that, so it will be interesting to see how that number changes or does not change moving forward. Moving on from that, our friends on the Global Research and Analysis team here at Kaspersky Lab released some interesting research this week. So, Chris, what is this Luke fraud campaign?
Yeah, it was just on Monday that researchers with Kaspersky Lab pulled back the covers on the latest fraud campaign, dubbed Luke. The campaign actually allows attackers to make off with €500,000 in euros, almost $700,000 over the course of a week back in January. They used what appeared to be a bulked up, different version of Zeus. Scammers were able to swindle about 200 users through a series of man-in-the-browser attacks.
And as a point of reference, Zeus is a very widely deployed and famous banking Trojan.
Yeah, it's a very utilitarian Trojan, too. Anyway, the criminals transfer their funds through four different groups, each one handled a particular sum of money, which is something that experts suggest a different level of trust in the scheme. While the server disappeared without a trace as soon as researchers found it, it's believed the campaign is just undergoing an infrastructure change and will restart soon.
Interesting. The other research I'm going to be brief on because there isn't much of a consumer angle to it, but it's still interesting. We'll post some links beneath the podcast on the website if you're interested in further reading. A team of researchers at Kaspersky Lab and Citizen Lab at the Monk School of Global Affairs at the University of Toronto released a report on the controversial Italy-based hacking team, who basically sells surveillance gear to governments and law enforcement agencies around the world. Citizen Lab and Kaspersky Lab have been examining hacking team for a while, but the new report really digs into how their mobile components work. There's definitely some interesting reports out there on this. So go ahead and check out the reading list if you're interested in learning more. Moving on, though, Chris, we had lots of hacks this month. Why don't you start us off?
Oh, yeah. Par for the course. Lots of hacks. news aggregator Feedly struggled to get back online earlier this month after it was taken down by a barrage of distributed denial-of-service attacks.
Do we know how many days it remained offline?
I think it was like 2.5 or so.
Yeah, 2 or 3, I would say.
Didn't get back online until Friday. I want to say it went down Wednesday morning, so about 3, yeah. When it got back online the first afternoon, it was taken down the next morning, and then the morning after that. note-taking service Evernote also suffered the same fate this month, found itself offline, but for a shorter period of time, about 5 hours.
Yeah, hackers also managed to compromise a Domino's server in France, spilling the information of some 600,000 French Domino's customers, as well as some Belgian ones as well. The info is said to include customers' full names, addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, passwords, delivery instructions, and favorite pizza toppings. A hacker group called Rex Mundi claimed credit for the attack and demanded 30,000 euro in ransom payments in exchange for the information, which Domino's did not pay. Also, the mobile and telephone service provider AT&T warned its customers of a data breach there, though it did not specify how many users were affected. Chris, what happened with TweetDeck?
Ooh, Twitter had to take down TweetDeck, which is its, Twitter management stream profile thing, more or less. They had to take it offline earlier this month after it fell victim to a cross-site scripting vulnerability. Turns out that an Austrian teenage programmer, which behind the whole thing, more or less, he just wanted to tweet a Unicode heart, which actually exploited a hole in TweetDeck and allowed cross-site scripting. And from there, another user created a worm that everybody on TweetDeck basically retweeted thousands of times, like 100,000 plus times. It's crazy.
Yeah, Mike, our editor Mike Mimoso wrote an interesting story where he interviewed that team. We'll go ahead and post that in the reading list as well. On to some privacy news. Facebook announced earlier this month that it would implement a new feature on its social network that will let users examine exactly why they are seeing particular advertisements. If you're looking to buy some fresh new shoes and surfing around the web, you may see ads on your Facebook feed for shoes. Now you'll be able to click somewhere around there, and Facebook will essentially tell you why you're seeing those ads, whether it's based on web tracking or maybe a business is just targeting your demographic and paying Facebook to send you ads. You wrote the report on that, Chris. Is that essentially what's happening?
More or less, yeah. It's opening up the floodgates even more so for advertising on Facebook.
They sort of represented it as a privacy gain, but when you really read about it more and more, it's, you know, either a loss or you're breaking even with that.
They try to pretty it up, but it's really just, you know, you can only put so much makeup on a pig, yada yada.
Yeah, as a person who's interested in all this privacy stuff, it will be interesting to look at what they're using to build the ads. I mean, they're going to pump ads at you anyway, so you may as well be able to see transparently why they're doing it. On the other side of the spectrum, Microsoft doubled down on its claim that it does not and will not target advertisements toward users. Now let's talk about something neither of us has any grounds to speak on, math.
Cryptography?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like we spent a lot of time on this podcast discussing security's many foibles, hacks, vulnerabilities, etc. So let's discuss something positive that's happened this month. Google released a version, albeit an early one, of an extension for Chrome that would help provide end-to-end encryption. That would allow users to better encrypt their emails. Google's actually been making a pretty good headway with this. The company's transparency report earlier this month showed a huge jump in the number of encrypted emails leaving its email service, Gmail, up to 69% by the end of May from 33% in January, which is a pretty respectable jump. Same jump in inbound mail as well, up from 30% to 56%. So, I mean, while every email provider claims to be aboard the encryption bandwagon, it's kind of good to see some numbers backing it up.
Yeah, Gmail's really sort of trying to lead the push on that. And speaking of cryptography trending in the right direction, the massive and very widely used blogging platform WordPress has announced that it plans to implement SSL encryption into all of its domains by the end of the year, which will add encryption to a wide swath of the internet. So let's close this thing out, as we often do, with some mobile news.
Yeah, Android users are kind of up in arms this month over the new way that Google's laid out its app permissions in Google Play. People are claiming that it's too broad. Users rushing through an installation of an app may overlook any privacy risks that may be associated with it. Basically, going forward, users will have to click into a drop-down menu to see the number of specific permissions going forward. So, I mean, if you're conscious about privacy, you may already do that, but a heads up to anybody that, you know, may not be, it's a little bit more of a hoop to jump through. But, I mean, these permission changes aren't the only problem with Google Play that was brought up this month. researchers at FireEye found a handful of fake placebo apps on the marketplace that basically did nothing. They just took users' money as soon as they were downloaded. The apps basically claimed that they would help protect users' mobile devices, antivirus, virus scanning, that and the like. Some cost up to $4, but they were ultimately removed after they were detected, and Android users shouldn't worry about them, but they should always double-check that any apps they're going to download on Play or, I mean, even Apple users on the Apple Store should make sure they're legitimate before forking over their credit card information.
Were they also taking information from users?
They weren't. They were just completely bogus, fake apps.
They just did nothing.
They took your $4, and they they basically showed a progress bar that moved along your screen, acting as if it was scanning your phone for viruses, and it did nothing in the background.
Clever ruse.
Yeah.
So one of my favorite stories this month is that what came when the New York State Attorney General announced that Google and Microsoft would build so-called kill switches into their mobile devices. These kill switch features, rather, would mimic Apple's activation lock, which users can enable in the event that their phone is stolen. Once the feature is enabled, the person holding the phone would have to enter the legitimate user's iCloud password in order to do anything with the phone. So without that password, the phone is essentially useless. It's just a brick. The impetus for this move, though, interestingly enough, is based on a study conducted in New York City and San Francisco. In brief, the study found that iPhone theft, which often involves violence, decreased dramatically in the period of time following Apple's implementation of that activation lock feature. Over the same period of time, however, thefts of Android devices without the feature continued to rise. So in an attempt to combat that, they're going to, well, I mean, they've, I think Apple and, or I think Google and Microsoft willingly are implementing this feature, but there are laws on the books in California that now you have to have those features built into the phone. I'm not sure that they've been passed yet, but they're certainly finding their way through the state Senate there. Speaking of iOS, Apple announced at its annual rah-rah Worldwide Developers Conference that iOS 8, which is set to come out in the fall, would have a feature that randomizes MAC addresses. From what I've read, static MAC addresses can be monitored when a device connects to a Wi-Fi network. So, for example, retailers will track information on devices connected to the Wi-Fi networks in their stores in order to monitor customer movements and behaviors within retail locations. However, as is always the case with Apple, the company can't do anything without criticism, and a number of people are saying that this move isn't really the privacy win it appears to be. It's a way of giving favor to Apple's own proprietary indoor mapping software, iBeacon. Speaking of iPhones, Chris, why don't you tell us what happened with the whole Oleg Plus situation?
Yeah, I think we may have talked about this last month, but there's a follow-up this month. The Russian Interior Ministry claimed that two men were recently arrested for the blocking of Apple devices to extort funds.
And this was the one that I think we did discuss the last month, just to reference back to that. This was the attack that was widely believed to be being launched through hacked iCloud accounts?
That's what it was thought to be. It hit mostly Australian iPhones and iPads, and users basically woke up to a ping from a Find Your iPhone notification and said, your phone's been hacked by Oleg Plus, and users would have to pay $100 through a online money service to unlock the phone. Anyway, it's basically, Russia wouldn't come out and say that they were the men responsible for this, but they both seem to have the same well-established scheme, using email accounts and elaborate phishing pages to, you know, fish Apple ID credentials and so on and so forth. So it would appear that those men are behind bars now.
All right, and then in late breaking news, there's a vulnerability in the way that PayPal handles certain requests from mobile clients that can allow an attacker to bypass the two-factor authentication mechanism for the service and transfer money from a victim's account to any recipient he or she chooses. So keep an eye on those PayPal accounts until the issue is resolved. That's all we've got for this month. As we record, the final group stage match for the U.S. is about to kick off against Germany in the World Cup. So I'll ask you, Chris, the only person I know that has not paid any attention to the World Cup and is far more interested in the NBA draft. Who is your pick to win this match?
The draft tonight or the match?
The match. We're not going to talk about the NBA draft.
I'll go U.S. I think I've watched one game so far.
The underdog. Yeah. That's a sad admission. Thanks for listening, everybody. Chris, thanks for coming on.
No problem.
All right. Have a good day.